This film has been formatted to fit this screen and edited to run in the time allotted for content. Rays of light glow from behind the Earth's black globe. As the Earth spins, the light rays show up the Earth's surface, and the word Universal in white lettering appears over a blue globe. www.universalstudios.com. Cloud-filled blue sky over windswept ocean water shrinks, then expands into a stormy sky with the word Interlight forming over it. In white lettering over a black background, Universal Pictures presents, in association with Interlight, a Lewert Ebert's production, a Choi Niamey production, a Joe Charbanek film, The Watcher. Against split-screen scenes of a man running down a city street at night, credits continue. James Spader, Marissa Tomei, Ernie Hudson, Chris Ellis, and Keanu Reeves. Casting by Mary Jo Slater, CSA. Music by Marco Beltrami. Producers, Stephen T. Puri and Clark Peterson. Co-producers, Jeremy Lappin and David Elliott. Edited by Richard Norb. Production designers, Brian Eatwell and Maria Queso. Director of photography, Michael Chapman, ASC. Executive producers, Patrick Choi and Paul Pompian. Produced by Christopher Eberts, Elliot Lewitt, and Jeff Rice. Produced by Niall Niamey. Story by Darcy Myers and David Elliott. Screenplay by David Elliott and Clay Ayers. Directed by Joe Charbonnet, the split-screen background becomes one image. The running man jumps aside and falls down to avoid an oncoming car. His eyes are opened wide, his mouth drops as he watches the car leave. A night scene of the Chicago skyline. A helicopter flies over the water. In the distance, another appears. The choppers have their searchlights on, scanning the waters. Following this route, they pass a lighthouse at the end of a breakwater. The semi-lit Chicago Board of Trade building comes into view, and then the street below. Flashing their blue lights, numerous police vehicles dodge cars as they race through traffic. The police cars skid to a stop, blocking off oncoming traffic. From the roof of a building, a leather-gloved hand loads a rifle as the choppers fly nearby. A white light flashes on a man's back inside a building. He holds a pistol and moves to the music. Inside, David Griffin raises his hand while gyrating and in slow motion moves forward. Outside, the chopper with three men on board searches the streets. Inside a building, backlit from the window, David moves to the music. On the street, police run. From a helicopter, five men in black jumpsuits are lowered to the roof of the building. Inside the room, David moves in slow motion, executing karate-like moves. On the roof, police forces have merged and move forward together, guns and rifles drawn. David, in a darkened brick and concrete structure, runs. Outside, strong beams of blue and red lights flash as police continue their pursuit. A man with a broom is pulled down and held at gunpoint by two policemen. Inside, David is crouched down on the floor with his hands raised. Outside a door, helmeted policemen, guns raised, pause, then one of them kicks the door in.
It's never quite that easy. You go through the door, and they're never just sitting there waiting for you with a welcoming smile on their face.
Joel in an office.
Best you can do is hope they up and do what you can to be there when they do.
And then blame yourself for the killings.
Oh, no, I blame the asshole who did them. This man's whole life is about killing. He studies it. He knows forensics. He understands police procedure. He prepares methodically so as not to leave any evidence at the scene.
Flashback of a woman in a garage.
After he picks his target, he'll watch her for weeks. He'll study every detail of her routine. When she comes home, when she goes to sleep.
A record of her habits when she's alone.
In the morning before the sun comes up, he can walk right up next to her. Even though the sun's still down, no one perceives it as night. Women who are careful at midnight walk around half naked 7 hours later.
She puts on stockings.
Finally, he'll pick a day. He takes a kit with tools and props, duct tape, handcuffs, a weapon, whatever he needs. He'll let himself in.
Leather-gloved hands open a door.
That night, she'll get home, go about her business unaware that he's in the house.
The woman enters her dark apartment and closes her door. She walks down the hall and opens a door to her bathroom, leaving the door open. Closing the bathroom light, she re-enters the hall, then crosses it, entering her bedroom. The dark-haired young woman switches on a light in her closet. She chooses a hanger and hangs up her coat. In the dark hall, we see David, the man who was doing karate, walk across to her bedroom and close the door. He is behind his victim. A flash of white, and he grabs her and covers her mouth. Now, outside, a brownstone with shades half-drawn and a light on. Now, inside, a rubber-gloved hand moves across a stack of CDs.
Oh, this is good.
David removes the disc from its casing and feeds it into a player. Taking off his jacket, he turns to the woman, bound and gagged in a chair.
Shall we dance? No, don't play hard to get. This will be fun.
David pulls the desk chair out and wheels her around the room, pivoting the woman by the top of her head, making her turn round and round. He picks her up. Her hands are bound behind her back.
It's all right. It's all right.
Holding her close, he kisses the tape covering her mouth. He sits her back down.
When she passes out, from fear or pain, he'll revive her over and over again.
Joel scratches his head.
What were you going to say?
He looks at the office clock, then turns to Polly, his therapist.
Time's up.
Polly, a pretty brunette, looks at the clock, turns back to Joel and smiles. Now, Joel enters his apartment and turns on the lights. Papers are all over. The garbage is overflowing. On the kitchen table, he sets down the mail, including an unopened FedEx package. Going to the cupboard, he gets a pill container, shakes out a few pills, and grabs the Coke can he brought home. Joel takes a swig of Coke, throws his head back, and screws up his face. Then, throws the can onto the trash barrel. He opens the almost empty refrigerator, sees five items, and chooses an orange. Still wearing his trench coat, he walks into the living room, which is monochromatically decorated in tan and strewn with papers. Joel sits down on the couch, peels the orange, and stuffs chunks of it into his mouth. He casually flips through a lingerie catalog on the coffee table.
He closes the magazine, throws the orange peels on the table, and sits back, holding his hand to his head. As time passes, the image of Joel sitting on the couch dissolves to another angle. He has not moved his position. Again, Joel's image dissolves into a close-up of his face. His eyes are wide open. A neon light blinks on and off, reflecting on his face. Now, an image of a burning candle. Then, a martini glass with a woman's hand holding the stem. On her left hand, she wears a diamond engagement ring and a matching wedding band. A man's hand gently touches hers. A close-up shows her smiling lips, then her hand being held. The woman, Lisa, lowers her eyelids and smiles at the man. The image fades to Joel sitting on the couch in the same position with a neon light flashing.
Why did you turn away from me? Why was it so hard for you to accept?
Flashback to Joel running.
There's no I did it for you.
Now, David washes blood from his gloves.
You came so close to me that night. I remember clearly what I felt when I heard your footsteps falling behind me. Pride. I thought it would keep us together forever. For me.
David talks to himself in the mirror over the sink.
It was our finest moment. I can still see the flames.
A flashback of Joel facing a yellow wall of flames. He tries to push forward, kicking things as the flames surround him. Now, Joel sits up on the couch and holds his head in his hands. His face is contorted with pain and his eyes are shut tight. Joel, still holding his head, jumps over the coffee table and runs to a kitchen drawer and pulls it out. It falls out of the floor. Scrambling through the drawer, on his hands and knees, he pushes things aside and finds a syringe and a bottle of liquid. He fumbles with the apparatus, falls back against a door, and slides down. Sprawled on the floor, Joel pulls his pants down to below his hip, squirts a bit of liquid into the air, and inserts the needle into a huge black and blue area on his stomach. An immediate calm passes over his sweating face. Now, a flashback to a city street. It's night. Joel exits a building. Then, pausing to look up and down the street, he crosses to the other side. He walks past a shop with a metal grating covering its facade. We see him from the inside of a car as he walks past. Now, inside a Vietnamese restaurant. Joel sits alone at a table drinking a beer and eating. As Joel sips his beer, the camera moves around him, and we see he is seated in front of a window. On the street, two police cars go by. Now, outside, Joel walks slowly. There are police cars in front of his apartment building. A car almost hits him as he crosses the street. He holds his hand, indicating that the car should wait, then casually continues to cross. He ducks under the crime scene tape that lines the perimeter of his building's entrance.
Wanda, you want to run that in, Sergeant?
Right on it.
Hey, I'm Detective Mackey. Welcome to my crime scene. Can I help you find anything, or you just looking?
I'm just going home.
Joel shows his ID.
I live upstairs.
Did you not happen to notice that yellow police tape mark, do not cross, on it?
If you're done with that, I'll just take it and go home. It's all right.
Do you know this woman?
No, I've never seen her. What happened? She dead?
Well, I haven't made any reference to homicide. Why would you hasten to such a conclusion?
Well, you got half the block taped off, and you got, what, about a dozen cops in there? F*** up your crime scene. It just doesn't seem like someone boosting stereos to me.
Look, give me a call if you think of anything.
Detective Mackey hands Joel his card and watches as Joel ducks under some tape to get up the stairs. Now, the next morning, for him. As he sips his coffee, he sees the FedEx package he brought in the night before. Joel looks at the package, then rips the strip to open it. Inside is a photograph of the same young woman Detective Mackey showed him. Joel gets up and walks to a mess of papers on his hall floor. He pulls out another FedEx package from under a pile and rips that open. It is a photograph of a young blonde woman in a car.
Campbell,
I'm
that guy we met last night.
Screeching tires, Hollis and other police cars race down a street.
Yeah, Joel Campbell, our ex-FBI friend from Department 805. We did a little checking on you after you left last night. What can I do for you?
Are you busy? It sounds like you're in the middle of something.
Some genius jacked a Honda a couple blocks ago. It's an 86.
What, do you want me to call you back?
No.
When did she die, the girl?
Monday night, 3 days ago. Why?
Because I knew who did it.
And how much you know that?
He mailed me a picture of her still alive. I got it 3 days ago, Monday morning.
Hold on a minute, Campbell. Two Hondas on the run.
A police car cuts off another car. The door opens, and a man gets out and runs with Hollis in close pursuit. Hollis jumps the man, downs him, and gets back on the phone with Joel.
Okay, sorry to keep you. Now, you want to meet me back at my office?
Later in the police station.
Is it your custom to open your mail 4 days after you get it?
Nope. Sometimes it takes up to 2 weeks.
Well, this would appear answer any questions we had whether these two cases were related. Goodness gracious, nothing like a good serial killing to kick off the holiday season.
Right in here. Give me a minute.
Okay, that's it. You got him sending his pictures in the mail, Campbell. Hell, we ought to get Bob Barker in on this sumbitch. It's a damn game show.
His last alias was David Allen Griffin. I worked the case for 3.5 years in Los Angeles. We attributed at least 11 homicides to him.
What's he doing in Chicago?
I assume he's still strangling young women with piano wire. All the victims were left partially unclothed, and all the swabs came back negative.
Exactly. No touchy, no feely. Have you ever seen this guy?
No. No one's ever seen him.
Well, then we can't necessarily conclude it's the same fellow, can we?
Come on, he sent me pictures. Shoved the Vic right up my ass in my own building.
Joel takes the photos and leaves. Hollis looks down. Now a camera shop in a Chicago mall. A pretty blonde woman records her own image on a video camera. A customer enters. It's David Griffin. She puts the camera down.
Sorry.
It's quite all right. You looked adorable. This film stock says it's for exterior sunshine, but how's it handle fluorescence?
I'm sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about. I just work here.
She nervously fingers her sweater.
You do film processing here?
Yeah. 1 hour.
Mind?
Sure. What are you doing?
Going to test it out. I'm going to shoot some pictures. And you're going to process them.
David snaps a series of shots of the blonde as she smiles for the camera. A white flash and now outside a view of Marina City Apartments. Now the police chief's office.
The chief of Chicago PD already called. Not surprisingly, I suppose, inviting us in on this. We're setting up a joint task force as we speak. I'd like to know if you think you can handle it on our end. I know they're in L.A.
This isn't L.A. It's not my job anymore.
You know what? The only reason that your burnout messed-up ass is standing in my office is because you had a 3-year head start on us. And this perp is dead set on putting you in the middle of this, whether we like it or not.
You're right. The field office in L.A. has irrelevant files. I can't tell you anything that's not in them. I'm sorry.
As Joel leaves, a detective enters.
Mike, excuse me. Mike, we got several sets of prints off the FedEx envelope and the photo itself.
I'm sorry, this is none of my business, but you can run the prints. You're going to get me, the driver, three guys from the warehouse, Santa Claus, a whole bunch of elves. Definitely not this guy.
Joel walks out.
Who the hell is that?
Run it.
Yes, sir.
Now, outside in a cemetery, gravestones are silhouetted against a blue sky. A white flash, and Joel walks slowly through the cemetery. From behind a high headstone, we see Joel stand before a grave. He bends down before the white marker, clears debris away from the stone, straightens himself, and walks away. Still watching him, we see him leave the cemetery from behind the tall gravestone. The name on the marker he stood before reads, "Our beloved daughter, Lisa M. Anton, 1965 to 1999.
Oh, can't anybody see?
Now with his therapist.
Well, you're young. You plan to live on disability your whole life.
I take 200 milligrams of Seconal just so I can sleep 2.5 hours a night. Twice a day, I take 400 milligrams of Acebutolol and 20 milligrams of Lotensin for high blood pressure. I self-inject migraine medicine whenever the fuck I please. They don't mix well with work.
Hmm. Maybe you're just afraid.
Fine. I am afraid.
Let's talk about that.
I go places and I forget why I'm there. I miss exits on the freeway. I'm lucky to find my way home from the grocery store, and if I do, then most of the time I've forgotten my groceries.
But yet you make it here every week. Twice a week.
What if the next picture that arrived was of your daughter? Would you really want me to be the one looking for her?
Yes. Yes. I would.
Joel stares at his therapist. Now, a blurry image of cars driving down the street at night. Now a bird's eye view of Joel lying face up on his bed, fully clothed, staring at the ceiling. A white flash, and now the West Coast Highway with Lisa in the car, her hair blowing across her face, laughing. Then Lisa James on his bed. Joel doesn't move.
Me who?
It's freaking cold here.
Why'd you move here?
Joel reaches for a pencil.
What do you want from me?
You hardly leave your apartment. And when you do, it's to eat at that same terrible Vietnamese restaurant night after night. You seem so bored. I was expecting a warmer welcome.
He writes, watching me.
Well, I didn't ask you here, did I?
The guy they replaced you with. I tried to make it work, but we just didn't see eye to eye at all. I was going to quit the game entirely, but then I thought Chicago's not so bad.
At least you didn't move to New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Joel takes notes.
So why don't you grab a pen? I'll give you the name and number of the agent that's on your case. You can share your inner turmoil with him, so I don't give a shit.
I know your job is hard, Joel. So I'm willing to take steps to try and make things work between us.
What are you talking about?
The photos, Joel. I'll send you a picture, and you can have a day to try to find her.
I'll give you till 9 o'clock. What do you say, Joel?
I say I should have moved to New Jersey, asshole.
Good night, Joel.
David leaves the payphone smiling. Joel hangs up. Flashback of Joel, wine bottle in hand, ringing a doorbell. Joel gets a quick glimpse of an intruder running out of Lisa's house through a door left ajar. Through a blurry picture, we see Joel push in and, drawing his gun, run through the apartment, searching for Lisa. She is on the bed, visibly shaken. He talks to her. Outside, the intruder runs past a wall covered with roses. Joel pursues him. A chain-link fence comes into view. Now, Joel wakes up with a start. Joel feels around under his bed for his gun. He cocks it and goes to the door.
Who is it?
Flowers for Joel Campbell. You didn't answer the phone, but the door downstairs is open, so I thought I'd just bring...
A woman stands holding a bouquet wrapped in cellophane.
Flowers on the floor.
The woman gingerly places the flowers on the floor.
Thank you.
Joel closes the door. Using tweezers, Joel opens a card with a photo of the girl who posed for David. It says, "No one missed you more than me."
What if the next picture that arrived was of your daughter? Really wanted me to be the one looking for her?
Yes.
I'll send you a picture. You can have a day to try to find her.
Now, Chief Ibby's office. Joel enters.
Got this half hour ago. I want the case.
Can you handle it?
I guess we'll find out.
Later in the office.
What else did this asshole say last night?
That's everything.
We already have a trap and trace on that line and on your cell phone.
What is that? Is that a bird? Some posters. Looks like we're shut inside.
Could be taken anywhere.
It was processed commercially. See if these numbers are traceable. If not, get me a list of every place in the city that prints on this Kodak paper.
You got it.
Is that mine? Okay. I'm sorry. I can't remember your name.
Mitch Casper.
Mitch, get this in the computer. Blow it up. Find out what's behind her on the wall. That thing right there, okay? Find out what kind of earring she's wearing, what kind of blouse that is. Okay, what's that on her glasses?
Reflection, yeah.
Okay, find out something about her. Anything.
Both girls are basically loners. Very little social contact. The last girl, parents were deceased. No close friends as far as we can tell. Is that his victim profile?
No. I mean, the victims were always young women, but he's sending pictures now. He's only going to target loners. You know, women people don't notice. Chuck has sent me a picture of the prom queen.
Yeah. Well, listen, before we go any further, we're going to have to make a decision as to whether to go to the press with this. We got to make it now.
Look, there's no decision to make. There is nothing else we can do for this woman.
Let's get him in front of the cameras. They're gonna like him.
Hollis at a press conference.
All I can tell you at this time is that we have substantial reason to believe this woman's life is in serious danger. The Chicago Police Department and the FBI are working in concert to try and locate her, and we're going to be grateful for any help you guys can give us in this endeavor. Every hour is critical.
This young woman is missing. Authorities are frantically searching for her. They fear for her safety.
Any information on the whereabouts or the identity of the woman police are referring to as Jane Doe, please call the number on your screen.
It's a photograph of an unknown young woman who they say might fall victim to a murder if she is not located by 9 o'clock.
Police headquarters.
What kind of earrings are those? What kind of blouse is that?
What are you bitching about?
Oh, come on, Diana. This was my case. Ibby opens the door and in flies Captain Barbiturate. You know, I don't care how well he knows this creep. I say if his pupils don't dilate, then we don't need him.
Diana holds on her phone. Joel approaches a desk.
Okay, thank you. We'll check it out.
Anything yet?
85-90 calls in the last 15 minutes. I mean, lots of maybes and possibles. We're trying to sift through this, but there's a lot of it.
Outside.
Despite a massive search this afternoon, police still have not located the anonymous woman whose photo was received this morning. They continue to rely on your help in this frightening case.
In the camera store, the smiling blonde who posed for David sits alone, swiveling back and forth in her chair. Now, Joel, dressed in suit and tie, slowly walks by huge blow-up sections of the blonde's photo, studying each one as he passes.
Thank you.
In one photo, there is a reflection in her glasses of someone taking her picture. Joel stares at the photo. Mitch walks by carrying photos.
Mitch. What is that? A sign?
Uh-huh.
See?
Yeah, all right. I'll enhance the drum scan. We'll bring it even closer and we'll see what we got. All right?
Yeah.
The numbers are only relevant if we find the location where it was processed.
What about the paper?
The list is on its way. 1,100 locations. 1,100?
What? You know where there's a Lou Mitchell's restaurant on Oak Street?
Yeah, it's in the Gold Coast area.
We'll take it. Let's try.
Diane follows Joel out of the office. Now, a clock reads 5:14 in a diner.
Yep, I'm pretty sure that was her. She was wearing the headband.
Was she alone or was she eating with someone?
She was alone.
When was the last time you saw her?
I don't know, sometime last week.
Can you be more specific? What day?
No, not without making it up.
I don't want you to do that. I want every employee that worked here in the last week in the restaurant within the hour. Managers, cooks, dishwashers, cashiers.
That's going to be hard.
Life is hard. Pull every credit card sale for the week. Mm-hmm. Eliminate men, yes. Married women, anyone over 40. We need to call every one of them.
Got it.
We've got to be on the phone, see if we can get some help.
Okay.
Can you spare anyone?
I can get y'all the help you want.
Good. We'll fax them a list of names. We need to start making calls.
I'm on it.
Now, police headquarters is alive with activity. All phones are busy, and people quickly come and go. Now, outside traffic.
Authorities are hoping that as millions return home from work and turn on the television, that someone will recognize this young woman. They're taking this threat on her life very seriously.
Time passes on the diner clock. Joel sits at the counter. Mitch approaches as Joel swallows some pills.
Excuse me. Check this out. You're right, it's definitely A, P, and the line is an exclamation point. Does that mean anything to you?
Add a CR to it, it spells crap.
Yeah, that's true, it spells crap.
One of your waitresses saw her here sometime last week. Look at the picture carefully and tell me if you remember her.
No, outside.
Sorry, man, I'm making a point to pay as little attention to the customers as possible.
Does it seem like playtime to you?
No.
Take a look at the picture and tell me if you saw her.
I never saw her.
Sure?
Yeah.
That's too bad. Thank you for coming in.
The clock hand moves quickly. Now, Joel and Hollis.
Come on, darling. Click on your television. Say it's Thursday night, goddammit. Must see TV.
Earlier today, we told you investigators were combing the streets of Chicago searching for this woman. They are still in need of your help. Coming up after a short break, the city council approves a new budget.
That's all the hell they're going to give us. This woman's life is hanging. What was the time of death on those other two?
Nine.
What?
Nine.
The clock reads 8:32.
It's done. I gotta make it.
Joel leaves. Now, the mall photography shop. As the blonde leaves, her image is on two monitors. Outside, her face is on a poster. Now, Joel, Diana, and Hollis in the diner.
Third possible sighting of Fox Pavilion Mall. Grab some backup. You want to come up?
You know me, you have to come back. Talk to you later.
Outside, a tan wagon pulls up onto a sidewalk.
Guys, look. She's been sighted here on three separate occasions, okay? Everybody we see walking around here is a possible witness, all right? So I want you to fan out. I don't know if she works here. I don't know if she lives nearby.
Okay, take
fan
these
out
flyers.
Pictures.
Everybody
okay?
In the place.
Anybody who's seen her, all right? I want to
okay,
know.
Okay, you guys
who
come with me.
Who spoke to the most recent caller?
I did.
You? Let's go.
Great, let's take level 3.
Plainly visible, she stands in the elevator as police hand out her photograph.
Take a look at these pictures, please. Speak to the gentleman back here. Take a look at that, please. Thank you. Take a look at that. Thank you.
A white flash. With her blue jacket on, the blonde walks out of the elevator and through a store, passing numerous shoppers on the way out. Now, Chief Ibby and his staff powwow at headquarters.
So you do that. What information do you have?
Yes.
Now, outside on the street, we follow the blonde from behind. Now, inside the mall, police hand out flyers.
No, I've never seen
her. Here you go.
A white flash. A clock radio reads 8:51. In her dark apartment, the blonde enters. She removes her key from the door and flips on the light. We watch her from behind a beaded screen. Pushing aside the beads, she enters the pitch-black room and walks on through it into a light kitchen where her white cat sits on a counter.
Frank? Hey, Frankie. How was your day? Hmm? Oh, yeah? That's nice. Mine? Not so good.
A white flash. She unzips her jacket and walks into the dark hall, taking off her scarf on the way. She turns on the light in her closet, grabs a hanger, takes off her coat, and hangs it up. She turns off the light, and the screen is black. Now in the warehouse, David stoops down beside Jesse.
Hi.
Hey.
That sounds great.
Yeah? You like it?
Absolutely.
Well, here. Let me turn it off.
Jesse reaches for her radio, then swings at hitting David in the head. She gets up and runs. David recovers from the blow and runs down the street after her. Now, Hollis grabs her boyfriend. Joel joins in and repeatedly rams him against a wall. He holds him there until he catches his breath.
You don't tell me where she is. Your friend Jesse will be dead within the hour.
Joel pushes the boyfriend out on the street. He runs to find Jesse as Joel follows. Back in the warehouse, Jesse runs from David. In pursuit, David trips over debris. It is very dark as Jesse, running between concrete columns under a building, tries to lose David. Jesse, breathless, sits on her haunches behind a pillar. David stops running and begins to walk slowly in the dark area. Jesse is crouched down, and we see David's feet walking through a puddle, checking from side to side. Sees her silhouette in front of him, and he runs after her as she starts down the stair landing. Now on the street, Jesse's boyfriend leads Joel and Hollis through the traffic toward Jesse's hideout. They pass a stone header reading 319 West Erie Street. Now, David runs downstairs. Now, the boyfriend, Joel and Hollis, run into an alley where the hideout entrance is.
He's on the top floor, man.
They crawl in after the boyfriend. Now, Jesse hides in a storage bin as David flips open storage lids looking for her. Spotlighting rooftops light the way. Outside the warehouse, police aim at the building. Now, silhouetted against broken windows, David, holding Jesse in front of him, holds a piano wire. He raises his arms over Jesse's head. She struggles, arms and legs flailing. A flash of light reveals Jesse's mouth wide open with blood pouring out, her neck ringed with blood. Now, the detectives, Joel sees someone run. Hollis pulls her boyfriend away from the scene. Joel draws his gun and runs after the shadow he saw. David slides through a basement doorway. He runs past three horizontal oil tanks. Joel is right behind him with his gun drawn. Standing by one of the tanks, Joel shines his flashlight from side to side. A loose wire hanging from the ceiling swings back and forth. He slowly proceeds down metal stairs. Joel shines his light on each stairwell as he descends. He hears a noise. In the dark up ahead, he sees David flash by. David runs between the columns, then past the storage bins. He disappears around the corner. Now, police break through the abandoned building and enter. David runs down a stairwell and tries to open a door, but it won't budge. He runs back up the stairs. Joel runs through the storage room looking for David. Now a chopper lights a rooftop. Joel shoots at David from the staircase. David runs out onto the rooftop. Overhead, the chopper keeps a spotlight on him. Joel shoots but misses, then runs after David, jumping over a low parapet. David jumps down onto a neighboring roof, then another. Joel follows him, losing his balance, rolling over and over. David continues to make his way downward, jumping from roof to roof. Joel jumps down onto a rooftop, landing hard. The chopper light searches for David, who is now two flights above street level. He stumbles head first over the side of a building, grabbing onto a cable wire that stretches across an alley to another building. Joel continues jumping forward from surface to surface. David has almost made it to the other side, crawling along the wire. The wire suddenly pulls out of the building he almost reached, and he swings backward, crashing into the wall. Joel looks over the side of the rooftop, sees David, takes aim, and fires. David lowers himself to the ground and runs to a parking area. Joel is lowering himself on cables. David finds a discarded toilet. He picks it up and smashes a Cadillac's window. Joel has almost reached the ground. David hotwires the car. He drives forward. Joel reaches the ground and runs toward David. Just as David pulls out, a police car blocks his way. David backs up. Joel gets into an empty police car and speeds toward David, who is driving away through a different exit. Now, David speeds down the alley, followed by Joel. He swerves out onto a city street. A dozen Chicago police cars join the chase. He takes a sharp turn and causes an accident between two cars trying to avoid him. David takes out a cigarette lighter, ignites it, and tosses it onto the hood of his car. The gasoline erupts in a huge flame and carries down to where the police cars are parked. An explosion throws an approaching police car flat into the air. It turns over and over, landing upside down its carcass of burning mass. The area is an inferno of explosions as the fire spreads out over everywhere. David, calmly sitting in the Cadillac with its hood on fire, starts the car and drives away from the fiery scene. A bird's eye view shows everything in the vicinity on fire. Now, Joel, with rubber gloves, sits hunched down over Jesse's bloody body. Crime scene investigators take photos of her. Joel removes the rubber gloves and looks into space. The picture fades to black. Now, Mitch and Chief Ibby walk into Joel's apartment building and stand before his door.
Campbell! Campbell, you okay? Campbell, open the door.
Chief Ibby motions for Mitch to force the lock. They enter.
Campbell? You there?
The chief finds Joel sprawled on the kitchen floor in front of his open refrigerator. He turns him over and feels for a pulse.
Mitch, call for a minute.
This morning, investigators are still in search for the serial killer responsible for last night's rampage. Three policemen were killed and one young woman was murdered. The FBI agent in charge of the task force has been hospitalized.
In a hospital bed, Joel's eyes flutter open. Polly enters.
Hi.
Hey, hey. Come in. You don't have to come here.
I didn't think you could get to me. So, besides, I don't have that many patients yet, so I really can't afford to lose one.
Yeah. Ever seen you outside the office? You look so different. Mm-hmm.
Because you look exactly the same. Have you eaten? Do you need to eat?
All I got is Jell-O.
Okay.
You want to eat? Yeah. Let's eat.
Okay.
Now at night, Polly's office building. Inside her office, a flashlight shines on a set of files. The light lands on a drawer labeled CD, and a gloved hand opens the drawer. The hand pulls up a file marked Campbell, removes it, and closes the file drawer. David, holding a flashlight in his mouth, opens another drawer containing labeled envelopes with audio tapes. David empties Campbell's tapes into his hand. Now night on a city street. A Siamese cat purrs against David's hands as he sits in a car with the tapes.
In other words, he missed you.
Odd, isn't it?
Did you miss him?
What the hell does that mean?
Now, Mitch at headquarters.
I'm sorry, I can't talk now. I'll call you back, all right?
Excuse me, Agent Casper. This just came for Agent Campbell, and I just...
How'd you get this?
The post office borrowed it from his apartment.
Thank you.
Now, Hollis gives a briefing.
My comments today will be brief. As many of you know already, we have received another photograph.
No,
I am not going to answer any questions today. I just am here to pass out this photograph and to request that you continue to assist us in this investigation. That's all.
Police Detective Hollis Mackey informing us that this horrible game of cat and mouse will continue today. Here is the photo of the killer's latest target.
From his hospital bed, Joel watches TV and sees a picture of Lisa smiling. As he stares, open-mouthed, he flashes back to the scene of David in her house, running out past the rose covered fence. In a series of flashbacks, he sees himself checking on Lisa.
Like that.
He follows David. Back in Lisa's bedroom, a drape catches fire and she screams. A can of flammable liquid lies next to the drape. Joel then flashes back to himself, running along the street. In a series of memories of Lisa, the martini glass, on the beach, the drape on fire in her bedroom. Then Joel running, the car almost hitting him. Lisa tied to a chair, writhing in flames in her bedroom. Then Joel giving up the chase and returning to Lisa's burning house. Of Joel trying to get to Lisa through the wall of flames. A wedding picture of Lisa and her husband. Joel is in his hospital bed, watching Lisa's picture on TV, and a card showing a cemetery that says, "With heartfelt sympathy for your loss because we're friends." Joel rips out his IV and gets out of bed. Now, outside, a yellow cab enters a cemetery. It winds its way down a road. And stops. The door opens and Joel gets out. He zips up his sweater and pulls his coat around him. He carries a gun. As he nears Lisa's grave, he looks up and sees David resting against her headstone, grinning at him. He stops short and raises his gun.
Hi, Joel. How's the heart, pal?
Joel slowly walks toward David, keeping his pistol aimed at him.
Here. You want a beer? It'll make it feel better.
David walks toward Joel.
Stop.
Here.
David stops and puts a beer on the grass, then walks back a bit.
Tell me something. Did you move 2,000 miles to live near this woman's grave? You did, didn't you? Man, you gotta get out more. I mean, is this a satisfying relationship? She loves me. She's decomposing. She loves me. She's decomposing.
What are we doing here? What is this? You here to give yourself up?
Why didn't you tell anyone you were f***ing her? Just because she was married?
We don't seem to be communicating. Let me be clear with you. I have no problem with shooting you dead where you sit.
Oh. You do have one problem. If I'm dead, your friend Polly is going to meet a rather gruesome fate, involving candlelight and quite a large pool of kerosene. And you know something about attractive women burning, don't you? Tell me, what was it like? Could you smell her flesh burning?
David holds up Polly's white address card smeared with bloody fingerprints, and it flutters to the ground.
You've already killed her.
Come on. You know me better than that. That's not even her blood.
Take me to see her, then.
Oh, I don't know about that. Can we just sit here for a little while and talk, Joel?
I'll talk once I see her. I just need to know if there's anything to talk about.
David takes a swig of beer. Joel holds out his gun to David.
Go on, take it. I just need to see that she's all right, then we'll talk.
David takes the gun.
Oh, bye.
Let's go.
They walk slowly side by side.
It's good to see you, Joel. Really is.
David shoots into the ground.
Wow, it's loaded.
David gives Joel a pat on the back as they walk. Now it's night. Joel drives and David is in the passenger seat.
We're going to make it through this, aren't we, Joel? I think that's more up to you than it is to me. You look older since you were in L.A. You're a good friend. You're like a brother to me. Did you know that?
Do you have any real brothers or sisters?
What the f... What is that? I'm trying to have a real conversation, and you're psychoanalyzing. What, Dr. Polly now?
I was just curious.
Look at me when I talk to you. You're trying to control this situation. Stop trying to control this situation. Can't you just leave your job out of this just this once? I'm telling you. I think you're spending too much time with that Polly bitch.
What do you need? You think about what you need. It's up to me to try and get that and make an exchange. Anything you need for Miss Spielman's safety.
What I need is you.
With his left hand in his pocket, Joel pushes a button on his phone that rings Hollis's cell. Hollis is on the street.
Hello.
I knew if I just came here and talked to you in person, you'd understand me better, Joel.
Lane running. He's got Campbell. Trace it.
You were the only one who thought about me. Who really knew me. And for a long time, I was the only one you had. And then you met Lisa. Pull in here.
Joel pulls to the side of the road in front of a building with a sign reading 500 West Cermak Road. He shuts off the lights, and they both get out. The building is brick, and all the windows are covered with grating. Joel, looking around, follows David into the building. They get into a large industrial elevator that David operates. The elevator doors close, and they ride up slowly, staring across the car at one another without saying anything. At the sixth floor, David stops the elevator, steps out, and Joel follows him. Now outside, Hollis waits for the phone trace.
Give me a second. Okay. He's about 20 miles north of the city.
Yeah, we're going to have to do better than that. Now, come on.
No shit. Give me another minute. We'll have his exact location. I got him. He's right on the water.
Now, David's hand cracks open a door. He slides in his hand and feels for a string that is attached to a gun. He finds it and takes it off. Opening the door wide, David smiles at Joel.
Come on in. Polly? Joel. Polly.
Polly is bound to a chair and gagged. Flammable liquid containers fill one corner and lit candles flicker nearby. David hits Joel over the head with a gun. He collapses. Mitch and Hollis board a police helicopter. The plane lifts off. David walks to the window and does his karate dance in front of Polly as he looks outside. Polly stares at him. Outside, helicopters move over the city. space unit slides down ropes from the tower into a room. Inside, David crouches down, puts his fingers to his head, and moves over to where Joel is lying. He grabs him and drags him onto a chair by the window. Joel is out of it.
Pinky wink, Joel.
David shines an extension light into his face.
It hurts, doesn't it? I've heard that flashing lights and migraines don't go together at all. You're no fun.
He holds a gun to Joel's head.
Oh, no, Polly. No. I'm not going to kill him. We need each other. We need to find each other. We're yin and yang. Black and white. Isn't that right, Polly? Polly?
He rips the duct tape from Polly's lips.
I said, isn't that right?
I don't understand the question.
Did you or did you not, in your professional opinion, reach the conclusion that Joel and I need each other in order to give meaning to our lives?
Stands up. David grabs the gun and holds it to Polly's neck.
Sit down. Sit down.
I'll sit here and listen to you talk all night. Just take your hands off her. Come on. Put the gun down. We both know you're not going to do it.
And why do we know that?
Because you can only kill her once. He's right.
David shoots Joel in the thigh. He falls to the floor. Outside, police cars race up to the building and fire. Officers race down from the roof. Inside, Joel holds his leg, wincing in pain. David sets Polly down and grabs Joel, shoving him into a chair. He puts his forehead up to Joel's.
How's this for deja vu? You got the fire. We've got the pretty girl. Only instead of bringing us together, you moved to Chicago. The guilt must have been unbearable. Or something like that.
Is that what you want me to say? I feel guilty a woman is dead because I made a terrible mistake.
No. No, that wasn't the mistake. The mistake was turning back. Instead of pouring all you had into us, what do I want you to say? I want you to say thank you. I want you to say thank you for coming here and saving your pathetic life.
David, do you know how many serial killers are active in Chicago right now? 5. In the Midwest, at least a dozen. I could work on any one of them without even packing a bag. You get hit by a bus on a Thursday. I'm working on a new guy on Monday. You're my job. Your paperwork.
Holding the gun with both hands, David stands and strikes Joel in the head.
I can't believe you still don't know who you're talking to.
David picks up piano wire and puts it around Polly's neck.
No. Please, no.
I have to do this. He's not going to understand anything else. You heard him. Paperwork.
Thank you.
What did you say?
I said thank you.
David removes the wire and turns his attention to Joel. Polly gasps.
Tell me again.
I said thank you.
As David comes close to Joel, Joel stabs him with a pen, sending him reeling. A candle tips over and ignites the fluids. Flames are everywhere. Joel runs for the gun that's hooked up to the door as David takes aim. He grabs the gun and shoots David in the shoulder. As David falls, Joel picks Polly up, carries her to the door, and unties her wrists. The compression gauge on the gas tank rises. Joel and Polly are trapped. David is on fire. The police break in the elevator door and a ball of flames comes out of them. Polly and Joel run to the window and leap. David, who is now a mass of flames, jumps out after them as an enormous explosion sends fireballs shooting out the windows. Polly and Joel land in the water and surface together. Next to them is David's body floating with the debris. The scene is lit up by the chopper's headlights. Two policemen bend down to pull Polly out of the water. Joel sees David floating by, head down. He paddles nearer and turns him over to see his face. It is charred and bloody. David swims over to the policeman, and they pull him out. Policemen have Polly wrapped in a blanket.
Give me that blanket.
It's a girl. She all right?
Right over there.
Let's get the body.
Okay.
On the water, David's corpse floats face down as a police boat approaches silently. The boat's search beam lights up the water rescue. David wears a bandage on his leg, and two policemen help him walk. Polly joins him.
It's never quite that easy. You go through the door, they're never just sitting there waiting for you with a welcoming smile on their face. Best you can do is hope they up and do what you can to be there when they do. Time's up.
The police boat nears David's body, and as the camera moves back, fire trucks hose the burning building.